The quiet fight for water, a West Texas duopoly's huge play in the Permian oil fields. I saw his leg rise up from the bed and I saw his skin begin turning blue. It started from the ankle and started spreading up his leg. It was like watching somebody pouring a blue liquid into a glass. It just began filling up. Alfred Thornhill, the young ambulance driver, would never forget that day in May 1953 when he saw 20-year-old Ronald Madison die. And he wouldn't talk about it for another 50 years. When Alfred rushed to the scene for an emergency call at Portan Downs, Britain's top secret chemical weapons lab, he was just in time to see Madison turning blue from the feet up. The young man was also vomiting up a substance Alfred described as like fish eggs or tapioca. Ronald had volunteered to test a new type of cold medicine. Instead, it was later discovered, the research chemists at the lab had purposely given him a lethal dose of the world's deadliest nerve gas, sarin. Originally designed as a pesticide by mild-mannered German chemist Dr. Gerhard Schrader in the late 1930s, the odorless, tasteless gas killed off every animal in Schrader's lab and quickly caught the attention of Adolf Hitler. By 1943, Hitler had commissioned a full-scale sarin factory outside Berlin and cranked out a stockpile of G-series nerve agents including tabin, taboo for forbidden, and the four times more deadly sarin. Then he just sat on it. Apparently, there were some lines even the Führer wouldn't cross. Sarin was so deadly that Hitler refused to use it in warfare. The Allies had no such qualms. After intercepting a barge full of G-series during the war, they captured and then granted amnesty to several of Hitler's top scientists in order to get the recipe. The chemists discreetly settled in England and America to whip up batches of nerve gas for the Allied cause. Before long, both countries had their own top-secret chemical weapons factories. England's was Portan Down, where poor Ronald Madison turned blue. Under pressure, ambulance driver Alfred signed a gag order and didn't speak up about what he'd seen for half a century. As for the Americans, they built their own clandestine sarin lab in 1942, the Rocky Mountain Arsenal, a 20,000-acre complex just north of Denver. That lab would soon generate its own breed of deadly fallout. Trying to manage deadly sarin gas for a while, the Rocky Mountain Arsenal's chemical lab was neatly contained in two big concrete buildings with 5-foot-thick walls. But as World War II wound down and the Cold War loomed on the horizon, the arsenal started to run out of room. Preparing for a showdown that never came, Army scientists filled the concrete bunkers with an ever larger stockpile of deadly substances. In addition to sarin, the roster included napalm, mustard gas, lewisite, chlorine gas, and white phosphorus. For every vial of chemicals, there was a vat of chemical runoff. Noxious fumes began to drift from cracks in the walls. Wildlife died. Citizens in nearby Denver protested. So the Army started offloading chemicals into ever deeper holes in the ground, which was where the trouble really began. At first, the worst of the toxic sludge was contained in 6 asphalt-lined lagoons, fed by an increasingly complex series of trucks and pipes. But the corrosive substances eventually ate through the pipes, then through the asphalt, and contaminated hundreds of acres of surrounding farmland, destroying crops and livestock. At a loss for what to do, in 1962, the Army dug a well. Injection wells, deep underground wells to store toxic wastewaters, have been around for almost 2,000 years, though they didn't catch on as a widespread waste disposal method in the U.S. until the 1930s. The wells are drilled beneath the basement level of rock, as much as 12,000 feet down. It seems like an elegant solution at first. Out of sight, out of mind. Until you inject waste at the wrong time. Or in the wrong place. The Rocky Mountain Arsenal well was just over 12,000 feet deep and held at least 1 million gallons of putrid poison water. It was also drilled directly on top of the Derby fault line, adding an incredible amount of fluid pressure, called pore pressure, on a weak spot in the crust. And that's how the earthquake started. Between 1962 and 1967, more than 1,500 quakes, many at a magnitude of 4.0 or higher, rocked Denver. The worst, a 5.3 magnitude tremor that caused $8 million worth of damage in today's money, caught the attention of U.S. Representative Roy McVicker, D., Colorado, who launched an investigation into the secretive chemical activities at the arsenal. A 1966 U.S. Geological Survey report shortly determined that the well had indeed caused all the earthquakes. Amid the resulting outrage, the Army hastily stopped injecting fluids into the well, started a massive cleanup operation in the 1980s, and shut down the base altogether in 1994. Today it's a bald eagle refuge, albeit still one of the most contaminated sites in America. Sarin-filled mini-bombs were found there as recently as 2001. It was the first known case of an injection well causing an earthquake, but it wouldn't be the last. The magnificence of the Permian. The Permian Basin is the most valuable energy production zone in the world. If the Permian were its own country, it would rank as the fourth largest oil producer globally, just behind all of Russia. With all that oil comes a lot of associated natural gas. At 25 billion cubic feet per day, BCF/D, the Permian is America's second largest gas basin, responsible for a quarter of total domestic output. Along with the massive growth in oil production, associated gas from the Permian is the fastest-growing source of new gas supply in America. The pace of growth in Permian gas production is so great that it routinely exceeds pipeline capacity. This causes West Texas gas prices to routinely dip into negative territory, meaning shale producers must pay pipeline operators for the privilege of taking the gas off their hands because they have nowhere to put it. Over the last 3 years, Permian gas prices have averaged 51 cents per thousand cubic feet, MCF, or a discount of more than 80% versus the U.S. national average. It's not much of an exaggeration to say, in the Permian, energy is free. That's made West Texas one of the premier locations for the construction of new data centers underpinning the artificial intelligence, AI, build-out. Big tech companies are flocking into the area in order to capitalize on low-cost, natural gas power generation to fuel these energy-hungry facilities. This includes OpenAI's flagship data center for the $500 billion Stargate project, along with dozens of additional endeavors currently in various stages of development. This has led to a record jump of 60 gigawatts, GW, of new gas-fired power plants added to the development queue in the Lone Star State last year alone. That's more than the next seven states combined. What this all adds up to is one of the most obvious and powerful trends of the next decade: a whole lot more energy production in the Permian Basin. But we're not recommending an energy company in this issue. There's an even bigger bull market being unleashed from the Permian energy and AI gold rush, a bull market in water. The Permian water boom. Before the shale revolution, Permian drillers used conventional production methods that didn't result in a lot of produced water. The volumes were small enough to be disposed of with water hauling trucks. But everything changed with the shale revolution. Fracking created 10x more produced water. Water is less viscous than oil, meaning it moves through underground rock formations with greater ease. So as wells age and the oil in the reservoir depletes, water begins flowing into the remaining spaces left behind by the extracted oil. This causes the percentage of water production to increase as the well ages. In order to maximize current cash flows, drillers target the most oil-rich locations of their acreage before moving on to second and third tier locations that contain higher water concentrations. As the Permian shale boom enters into its second decade, high-quality inventory has been depleted, forcing drillers to move on to lower-tier acreage that contain higher proportions of water. We can see these trends at work through the water-to-oil ratio, or water cut, of the Permian Basin over time. Note that the Permian's water-to-oil ratio has steadily increased over the past decade, from 2.6 in 2016 to 3.4 last year. As a result of these trends, Permian-produced water is significantly outpacing the basin's oil production growth. While oil production has increased 230% to 6.6 million barrels per day, BD, over the past decade, produced water volumes have risen 330% to 22.4 million BD. The biggest choke point in the Permian Basin dealing with all of this produced water is the core challenge to energy production today. If shale drillers can't dispose of their produced water, the entire operation shuts down. Produced water is highly toxic. During the Permian's formation, a series of evaporative water cycles left behind thick layers of salt deposits throughout the layered rock deposits. The end result, the subsurface water in the Permian is a dense brine, containing about 4x more salt than surface-level ocean water. In the early days of the Permian shale boom, disposing of this waste product was easy. Drillers simply injected produced water deep underground into saltwater disposal wells, SWD, about 12,000 feet deep, below the oil shales. But after billions of gallons of water injections, this eventually led to a dangerous increase in pressure within the gaps of the underground rock, creating, as we saw from the Army's operations above, significant earthquakes that rippled out hundreds of miles into towns like Dallas, El Paso, and San Antonio. In 2021, Texas regulators began cracking down on issuing new permits for deep disposal wells. This forced shale drillers to pivot to shallower SWDs, only about 3,000 to 7,000 feet deep. While this solved the earthquake problem, it quickly created a new one. West Texas contains thousands of post-production orphan wells that have no legal owner. The billions of gallons of water injected into this layer of rock caused pore pressure to rise, and you'll never guess what happened. Toxic water, explosive blowouts of long-dead oil wells. In 2022, a 100-foot geyser of reservoir water burst through this abandoned well, blanketing the ground with supersaturated salt water that resembled a fresh patch of snow. The well was plugged after gushing for 2 weeks, but it was just a band-aid on a bullet wound. Plugging the well did nothing to address the root cause: a continuous buildup in reservoir pressure from injected water. The ground literally gets pushed up as reservoir pressure builds. Engineers measure this through a metric called surface displacement, which shows how many inches the ground has risen above a reference point. In the area near the tub's corner well pictured above, surface displacement rose by about 4 inches before the blowout. After plugging the well, surface displacement shot up to about 17 inches over the next 2 years, ultimately resulting in a second blowout of another nearby orphan well, as shown in the chart below. The second blowout leaked toxic salt water for 53 days before the Texas Railroad Commission, the key energy regulator in the state, could plug it, for a cost of $2.5 million. And within weeks, surface displacement near the second well began rising once again. Plugging orphan wells is a whack-a-mole solution. The water has to go somewhere. Researchers monitor pressure levels in the basin, and they consider 0.5 pounds per square inch to be a critical threshold. Anything above this level means water can begin migrating through open pore space and find its way into orphaned wells, triggering more saltwater blowouts. The chart below shows that a wide swath of land running through the heart of the Delaware Basin in West Texas, the most prolific oil and gas producing region in the Permian, is now at or above this the 0.5 pounds per square inch level that researchers consider a critical threshold. The situation came to a head in 2025 after the alarming rise in saltwater blowouts from orphaned wells across the Permian. In response, the Texas Railroad Commission slashed new permit approvals for SWDs by nearly 50%. Drilling new oil or gas wells in the Permian is no longer about finding attractive new drilling locations. The biggest constraining factor is finding a place to put the wastewater. Based on a 2025 survey from the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas, 74% of oil executives operating in the Permian expect to face drilling constraints over the next 5 years due to insufficient water disposal infrastructure. But there is one company that saw all this coming and began investing heavily into water disposal infrastructure more than a decade ago, in 2015. Even better, that company also had the foresight to scoop up the property rights to some of the most valuable land in the Permian Basin for disposing of this wastewater. That, in a nutshell, is the bull thesis for the two companies we're introducing in this issue. The premier Permian water disposer WaterBridge Infrastructure, NYSE, WBI, owns the largest network of produced water infrastructure in the United States, 2,500 miles of pipelines and 197 produced water handling facilities, focused on the Permian Basin. The business processes 2.6 million BD of produced water, generating $790 million in annual revenue. But WaterBridge's greatest asset is its management team. Founder, chairman, and majority owner David Capobianco brings decades of experience as a master dealmaker in the energy sector. He famously orchestrated a billion-dollar corporate coup while working as managing director of Vulcan Capital, Microsoft co-founder Paul Allen's family office. Capobianco led a $460 million buyout of oil producer Plains Resources. But Capobianco wasn't trying to buy an oil company. The real target was the $3.4 billion Plains All-American Pipeline, a master limited partnership, MLP, and subsidiary of Plains Resources. In effect, Capobianco paid $460 million to gain control over and access to the majority of the cash flows from a $3.4 billion corporation. The deal reportedly netted Paul Allen's Vulcan Capital a $1 billion payday. But Capobianco and Vulcan became embroiled in a multi-year legal battle over an eight-figure bonus payment linked to the deal. Capobianco ultimately prevailed and parlayed his settlement into a new private equity firm called Five Point Energy in 2012. The U.S. shale boom was still in its infancy at the time. But even back then, Capobianco realized that water disposal would eventually become a major problem, particularly in the Permian. So in 2015, he partnered with Steven Johnson to launch WaterBridge Resources, the first pure-play water disposal business using pipeline infrastructure in the Permian. Johnson brought the critical industry expertise needed to reimagine the traditional water disposal business. He previously served as the president and chief operating officer of oilfield service company Nabors Well Services, where he managed one of the largest fleets of water disposal trucks in the U.S. At Nabors, Johnson saw firsthand that the old model of using trucks for water disposal was hitting a ceiling, costs were skyrocketing and the dirt roads in West Texas couldn't handle all the traffic. The only sustainable long-term solution was to replace trucks with pipelines. This midstreamization of water became the core thesis of WaterBridge. The business model is straightforward. Eventually renamed WaterBridge Infrastructure, the company gathers produced water from third-party oil and gas producers directly at the well site, and then sends the water through their pipeline network to a processing facility. There, water is separated from production chemicals, mineral solids, and any residual oil or gas. After this processing step, the majority of the water is disposed of into underground SWD wells. This water processing makes up 90% of WaterBridge revenue, which falls under the produced water handling segment. A small portion of produced water gets recycled and sold back to shale drillers, who can use the salty water in their fracking operations. This makes up 6% of revenue and falls under the water solutions segment. The remaining 4% of revenue comes from disposing of the solids waste that ends up in its produced water stream, classified in the other segment as shown in the breakdown below. The major driver of the business lies in its handling of produced water, and this business is booming. By 2019, within just 4 years of its founding, the company had built a massive network of 600 miles of pipelines capable of processing 1.3 million BD of water. Since then, it's doubled that capacity to 2.6 million BD. And while competitors have since sprouted up to capitalize on the Permian water boom, there's several key features that give WaterBridge a dominant advantage over them all. A wide competitive moat. WaterBridge's focus on safety has helped it aggressively take market share as its less prudent competitors get shut down. In a May 2019 interview with Energy, Oil and Gas magazine, Capobianco explained what separates WaterBridge from its peers. You have to focus on high-quality processes, the best facilities, and top-quality materials. We offer 24-hour coverage and a 24-hour operation, so we can monitor every well. The 24-hour well monitoring program Capobianco mentions is so sophisticated that the Texas Railroad Commission uses WaterBridge data for its own regulatory oversight. Another major advantage WaterBridge has over its competitors is the sheer scale of the business. As the owner of the largest produced water pipeline network in America, WaterBridge has layers of redundancies throughout its infrastructure. This way, if injection pressures rise in certain areas, automatic shutoff valves can reroute water to lower pressure injection sites. This geographic distribution is WaterBridge's single most valuable asset. It allows the company to avoid concentrating its disposal water into any one spot, and instead spreads it across more than 190 facilities to mitigate pore pressure spikes. The key metric that matters is known as pore space, or the amount of available capacity for safe, underground water injection. As most of the Delaware Basin, a shale basin within the larger Permian, faces regulatory pushback from overpressurization, available pore space for water injection is quickly becoming the hottest commodity in West Texas. WaterBridge finds itself in the enviable position of having more than it needs, with a total of 2.3 million BD of incremental pore space capacity available. This represents total spare capacity equal to 88% of its current disposal rate of 2.6 million BD, ensuring it can keep the water flowing at all costs. That's how it has maintained an average operational runtime of 99.7% over the past 2 years, establishing a reputation as the gold standard operator in the Permian Basin. By proving itself as a reliable partner that can keep the water flowing, it has secured long-term customer relationships with some of the largest Permian shale drillers, including Chevron, CVX, Occidental Petroleum, OXY, and AOG Resources, EOG. Another leading Permian driller, Devon Energy, DVN, went so far as to exchange its in-house water disposal infrastructure for an equity stake in WaterBridge infrastructure in August 2023. The rationale was simple. Devon's internal pipeline network would eventually run into the limits of underground pore space. Given WaterBridge's access to a surplus of available pore space, Devon's pipelines were more valuable as part of WaterBridge's network. And the fact that Devon took an equity stake rather than a cash payment provided a major vote of confidence in the future of the business. The deal made Devon one of WaterBridge's largest shareholders. Following WaterBridge's initial public offering in September 2025, in which 36% of shares became owned by the public, Devon retained a 14% equity stake in the business. The only larger shareholder is Five Point Energy, David Capobianco's private equity firm, which owns 50% of the business. As we mentioned before, the Permian water pressure crisis caused the Texas Railroad Commission to slash the number of new water disposal permits in half last year. WaterBridge became the biggest beneficiary of this regulatory crackdown. Its share of the total permits issued in the Delaware Basin rose from 5% in 2024 to 39% in 2025. WaterBridge is one of the few trusted partners the Texas Railroad Commission relies upon to provide real-time data and to maintain safe and sustainable operations in the Permian. So when less capable players got shut down, WaterBridge filled in the gap. What this all adds up to is a wide competitive moat, secured by geology and regulatory roadblocks. And we believe this is the biggest misconception about WaterBridge. A hidden gem Wall Street hasn't fully discovered. The market has priced WaterBridge shares at a similar valuation as if it were a traditional oil and gas pipeline business, which typically trade around 8x to 12x EBITDA, earnings before interest, taxes, dividends, and amortization. This is a discount to the overall market, because building oil and gas pipelines is not a great business. Competition is fierce and barriers to entry are low. That's why even top-tier pipeline companies like Energy Transfer, ET, and Energy Product Partners, EPD, generate lackluster profitability with around 20% operating margins. We believe the better analogy for WaterBridge is the municipal waste business, including companies like Waste Connections, WCN, or Waste Management, WM. While they're not the most glamorous, these stocks have quietly crushed the returns of the overall market by several hundred percent over the past couple of decades. The reason for their success is simple. Obtaining a permit for a new municipal waste landfill is nearly impossible in America. The process takes 7 to 10 years, tens of millions of dollars, and that's just the start. There's also a minefield of environmental regulations, zoning restrictions, and pushback from local communities that don't want a waste dump in their backyards. This all makes the existing landfills owned by incumbents irreplaceable, and thus highly valuable assets, just like the increasingly scarce underground pore space WaterBridge has access to in West Texas. And with water disposal demand in West Texas rising at a rapid pace, while available pore space declines, WaterBridge finds itself in an even more enviable competitive position than its solid waste peers. That's how the company generates stellar operating margins, well ahead of traditional pipeline businesses and even above those of the higher quality municipal waste companies, at 50% EBITDA margins. These margins are a reflection of WaterBridge's powerful competitive moat, and yet Wall Street hasn't given the company full credit for its superior business model. At $25 per share, WaterBridge trades with an enterprise value to EBITDA, EV/EBITDA, multiple of around 11x, right in line with oil and gas pipeline operators, and a steep discount to its municipal waste peers that trade at EBITDA multiples of 15x to 16x. Given WaterBridge's deep competitive moat and stellar margins, we believe it should command a premium valuation multiple of something around 15x to 20x. Plus, there's also the growth component. Given the long-term trend of rising volumes of produced water in the Permian Basin, and WaterBridge's ability to take a greater portion of the market share than most competitors, we believe the business is well positioned for 15% to 20% annual growth rates. The biggest near-term catalyst will come from the Speedway Pipeline Project, which consists of two 30-inch long-haul pipelines that will each handle 500,000 BD of produced water. The first pipeline is expected to come online in a few months, in mid-2026, followed by the second pipeline in 2027. Together, these two pipelines will boost the company's total capacity by 38%. Devon Energy has already signed up to take a big chunk of this capacity, as part of a 10-year offtake deal. We believe WaterBridge will not only find plenty of demand for Speedway, but it will likely sell this capacity at highly attractive rates. So what does this all mean for the share price? Let's begin by simply valuing the business based on the 2025 financials. The company generated $790 million in revenue last year, with EBITDA of $400 million. At $25 per share, the business trades with a market capitalization of $3.2 billion. Adding in $1.4 billion of net debt puts the enterprise value at $4.6 billion. In the near term, we see upside based purely on the market revaluing the business to reflect its dominant competitive position and highly attractive margin and growth profile. At a minimum, we believe it should command a multiple of around 15x, on par with its municipal waste peers, with potential upside to a premium multiple of 20x. That would put its enterprise value in a range of $6 billion to $8 billion, translating into a share price of $35 to $50. Next, let's consider the future outlook. WaterBridge's Speedway project alone should boost water disposal capacity by about 40% by year-end 2027. Assuming these volumes come with the same 50% margins the business currently earns, this should translate into a similar 40% increase in EBITDA through 2027. It's worth noting that this is likely a conservative assumption. Given the recent regulatory crackdown on new well permits, WaterBridge should have significant negotiating leverage for securing higher rates than it has achieved historically. Thus, we see a conservative upside case for the business to deliver 40% EBITDA growth over the next 2 years to around $560 million. Assuming a valuation range of 15x to 20x EBITDA, that would put its share price in a range of $55 to $75 by year-end 2027, or a return of roughly 100% to 200% in the next 2 years from its recent price of $25. Action to take: buy WaterBridge Infrastructure, NYSE, WBI, up to $30 per share. We are assigning a risk rating of 3 to WaterBridge since it has significant debt in relation to earnings. The West Texas Waterland, Lord Land Bridge, NYSE, pound, is the land acquisition and management arm of WaterBridge Infrastructure. Using the municipal waste analogy from earlier, LandBridge owns the landfill where WaterBridge disposes waste. Except in this case, the waste product is produced water. The company owns the surface rights to 315,000 acres of land in the heart of the Delaware Basin, making it the second largest landholder in the Permian Basin, just behind Complete Investor Recommendation Texas Pacific Land, NYSE, TPL, which owns about 870,000 acres. LandBridge's property contains the available underground pore space and the saltwater disposal wells that WaterBridge injects its produced water into. And even more critical, it owns contiguous blocks of acreage that enable WaterBridge to construct pipelines across its land, taking water from the wellhead to disposal wells. LandBridge earns royalties for every barrel of water injected into its land. It also collects royalties for allowing water to pass through its land via pipelines. These surface use royalties, as they are called, make up 68% of LandBridge's revenue, the largest portion of the business. The next largest component is resource sales and royalties at 24% of revenue. This revenue comes from the sales of produced water to shale drillers for use in fracking operations. It also includes royalties earned by allowing other companies to mine the composite rock material on its properties, which is used for road construction and well pads. Finally, the company also earns royalties from allowing the extraction of oil and gas on its properties, which makes up 6% of revenue. The thing we like about the business is that it primarily operates as a passive landholder, collecting royalty fees for the use of its land. This means minimal operating expenses and juicy profit margins. Last year, LandBridge took in $199 million in revenue and generated $177 million in EBITDA, for a remarkable 89% operating margin. And like most royalty companies, the business requires very few capital expenditures, allowing it to convert 61% of every dollar of revenue into free cash flow. This gets to the heart of a common question: why would Five Point Energy split WaterBridge and LandBridge into two separate businesses? The reason is because when a business contains an asset-heavy and an asset-light component, the market will often discount the combined entity relative to the sum of its parts valued independently. As a seasoned financier, Capobianco knew that LandBridge would command a much higher valuation as a separate entity. We can see this in the fact that asset-heavy WaterBridge trades at 11x EBITDA versus asset-light LandBridge at 23x EBITDA. This higher valuation means raising capital at more attractive rates, which in turn provides more fuel for growth. That growth started with the Hanging H Ranch acquisition in October 2021, giving LandBridge access to 72,000 surface acres in Loving and Reeves counties, Texas, just south of the border with New Mexico, and squarely in the heart of Delaware's most productive region. The company also made significant acquisitions in the southern region of the basin, near Pecos County. Finally, LandBridge made significant purchases toward the east and up north into the Texas Panhandle, as well as acquiring contiguous blocks of land across the border into New Mexico, adjacent to its Texas holdings, as shown in the map below. Brown blocks indicate LandBridge's acreage. Notice how in the map above the acreage blocks form a type of checkerboard pattern in many locations. This is because LandBridge had to work around the existing holdings of Texas Pacific Land, the largest landowner in the region. But instead of competing head-to-head, the two companies formed a long-term strategic partnership that effectively created a duopoly in land control in the heart of the Permian Basin, the West Texas Water Duopoly. In September 2022, LandBridge, WaterBridge, and Texas Pacific Land entered into a reciprocal agreement that includes water crossing rights and revenue sharing agreements across 64,000 acres of overlapping land holdings. Through these agreements, WaterBridge has access to Texas Pacific surface acreage, helping form contiguous blocks with LandBridge holdings, including the rights to process 700,000 BD of produced water, with another 500,000 BD of additional permitted capacity for future use. The agreement also provides rights of way for pipelines to travel across the acreage block, as well as rights to sell produced water, subject to royalty and revenue sharing agreements between all parties. In simple terms, these agreements allow all parties to lay pipelines and build infrastructure across the other's property, without legal friction. And eliminating this legal friction is a major competitive advantage when it comes to moving water around the Permian Basin. But that's not the only legal advantage in play for LandBridge. Cross-border legal arbitrage. Another thing to note about LandBridge's properties are the significant landholdings that cross the Texas-New Mexico border. A major portion of the Delaware Basin extends into New Mexico, responsible for 2.1 million BD of oil production. The problem for New Mexico shale drillers is that water disposal permits are much harder to obtain in the land of enchantment. Not only do fewer permits get issued, but the approval times can take a year or longer, versus just weeks in Texas. This has created a lucrative arbitrage opportunity for transporting produced water from the onerous regulatory environment in New Mexico into the more lenient Texas. And this is the next evolution of the opportunity set available for LandBridge and WaterBridge, from local water disposal to the export model. After a series of significant acreage purchases along the Texas-New Mexico border, LandBridge and WaterBridge are now positioned to capture a big chunk of produced water volumes in the New Mexico portion of the Delaware. We can see this in the chart below, which shows LandBridge's acreage in yellow, existing WaterBridge pipelines in blue, and announced pipeline projects in green. Pay special attention to the green line connecting WaterBridge's existing pipelines in New Mexico across the border into the Texas Panhandle, right into LandBridge's large contiguous acreage position. The green line at the top of the map represents WaterBridge's Speedway project mentioned earlier, the dual 30-inch pipeline system capable of hauling a combined 1 million BD of produced water. With this pipeline moving water from the high-cost New Mexico jurisdiction into low-cost Texas, it will unlock a tremendous source of growth for both companies. And it should be just the start, given the significant acreage position LandBridge has acquired along the border. It's all landing on the bottom line. This is just one of the many reasons business is booming for LandBridge. The company reported Q4 results on February 25 that blew away all expectations. Revenue increased 56% year-over-year, YI, to $56.8 million, while EBITDA jumped 61% to $51.1 million, both exceeding analyst estimates. The Q4 results capped off an incredible growth rate of 200% in the last 2 years alone, even as oil prices have traded lower over that time period, going for $60 per barrel in Q4. This highlights the strength of its business model as a duopoly player, with a dominant acreage position in the heart of the Permian Basin. Even when oil prices are low, it grows at incredible rates, because it's one of the few companies with available pore space to handle wastewater disposal in the Permian. With water demand in the Permian continuing to rise and a dominant land position that its competitors can't replicate, we see a lucrative road ahead for LandBridge. Given its rapid growth trajectory and a high-margin, asset-light business model, we view LandBridge as one of the highest quality compounders in the market today. The market sees all of these positives, pricing the business at a premium valuation. With LandBridge trading at around $76 per share, the current market capitalization is $5.5 billion. Management expects the business to generate $215 million in EBITDA this year, up 21% from 2025. This should translate into about $150 million in free cash flow. This works out to a forward valuation multiple of 37x free cash flow. So the shares aren't cheap. However, asset-light compounders growing at double-digit rates, with dominant competitive positions, should command a premium valuation. Shares of LandBridge's closest peer, Texas Pacific Land, trade at a 58x forward free cash flow multiple, despite generating the same operating margins and with a slower growth rate. And yet LandBridge trades at a nearly 40% discount, a discount we believe could eventually close. We view anything below a 40x forward free cash flow multiple as a buy price for a business of LandBridge's quality. That translates to around $104 per share. Action to take: buy LandBridge, NYSE, pound, up to $104.31 per share. We are assigning a risk rating of 3 to LandBridge since it has significant debt in relation to earnings. A review of complete investor recommendations, Porter and the complete investor team created an objective, formula-based equity pricing model, and, following that model, we revised the buy-up to prices for the entire recommended list. The rationale behind the new formula is that a business's intrinsic value is driven by both earnings quality and future growth. Our model, therefore, incorporates both metrics using the latest data from recent earnings reports. To determine value, we use an equation based on return on equity, ROE, to measure quality and forward earnings per share, EPS, for growth. To ensure a margin of safety, we apply a discount and other proprietary factors to normalize extreme valuations. The resulting number defines our buy-up to price. The complete investor analysts and editors discuss the new approach to buy-up to pricing in the latest Porter & Company roundtable, just released to subscribers this week. See it here if you have not already watched it. Here is a link to the list of complete investor recommendations. The new buy-up to prices are shown there. Some of the most significant changes to recommendations are these six companies, whose new buy-up to prices we list below: Venture Global, VG, $16.64 Franco-Nevada, FNV, $304.18 International General Insurance, IGIC, $45.21 Hovnanian Enterprises, HOV, $58.07 Mitsui & Company, MITSI, $1,053.31 NVIDIA, NVDA, $419.17 Recommended Positions with Hold Status BWX Technologies, BWXT, Core Natural Resources, Corner, Texas Pacific Land, TPL, Winmark, WINA, Deer & Company, Da, Diageo, DEAGE, The Hershey Company, HSY, Wingstop, WING, MSCI, MSCI, Progressive, PGR, Lowe's, L, Credit Acceptance, CACC, Celsius, CELH, Hovnanian Enterprises, HOV, Otis Worldwide, OTIS, Recommended Positions that Move to Strong by Venture Global, VG, ExxonMobil, XOM, Philip Morris International, PM, Franco-Nevada, FNV, Eli Lilly, LLY, Amrize, AMRZ, Kinsale Capital, KNSL, A. Lloyd's Acquisition and Insider Buying at Skyward Skyward Specialty Insurance, NASDAQ, SKWD, acquired Apollo Group in January, for $550 million. Since Apollo is a corporate member of Lloyd's of London, Skyward now gains the global licenses to write business in over 200 countries. Uber Technologies, NYSE, Uber, recently selected Apollo as its sole carrier for its autonomous solutions, a new unit designed to provide end-to-end commercial services to autonomous vehicle, AV, partners. The ride-hailing company specifically selected Apollo for its proprietary data, intellectual property, and leading position in AV insurance. If Apollo is the embedded carrier across the Uber AV platform, that means every partner deploying through Uber's platform potentially flows through Apollo's coverage. AV deployment is still tiny, accounting for just 0.1% of rideshare trips. But if AV deployment scales, this could become a long-term competitive advantage. Skyward's acquisition of Apollo adds $1.5 billion in managed premiums, and Skyward expects the deal will increase 2026 earnings by at least 10%. Including the impact of the acquisition, Skyward's 2026 guidance calls for gross written premiums of $2.8 billion, a combined ratio of 91%, and adjusted operating EPS of $4.90. In early March, Skyward CEO Andrew Robinson purchased $1.03 million shares, boosting his listed holdings 15%. Action to take: buy Skyward, NASDAQ, SKWD, up to $72.31 per share. NVIDIA expands its giant moat computer chip giant NVIDIA, NASDAQ, NVDA, started as a pioneer in gaming graphics and has evolved into the leading operating system of the artificial intelligence, AI, revolution. Its high-performance GPUs and integrated software power the world's most advanced data centers, including those of the largest cloud providers like Microsoft, MSFT, and Amazon, AMZN. NVIDIA operates a business model that is as dominant as it is defensible. Unlike competitors that only sell chips, NVIDIA sells an entire ecosystem that has become the industry standard. In its most recent fiscal year, NVIDIA returned $41.1 billion of free cash flow to shareholders through buybacks and dividends. It currently operates with gross margins above 75%, a level of profitability virtually unheard of for a hardware-scale business. As the agentic AI era begins, when AI doesn't just answer questions but performs complex tasks, NVIDIA's new Blackwell and upcoming Rubin architectures are positioned to be the primary engines for this next trillion-dollar shift. In February, NVIDIA reported quarterly revenue hitting $68.1 billion, up 73% YoY. The data center segment alone grew 75%, proving that demand for AI infrastructure is still accelerating. While the stock has seen a massive run, we believe the fundamental value is still being underestimated by the broader market. Here is why. Demand for Blackwell, a revolutionary platform for generative AI featuring 208 billion transistors for up to 30x better AI performance and 25x better energy efficiency over Hopper, is off the charts, according to CEO Jensen Huang Ngo. The company is successfully diversifying beyond computer chips into AI networking and physical AI robotics and autonomous driving, with its self-driving solution launching in Mercedes-Benz vehicles this quarter. Despite its $4.4 trillion market cap, NVIDIA shares trade at a forward PE that Bank of America Securities recently described as a historical low relative to its near-term earnings growth potential. With a share repurchase authorization of $58.5 billion still remaining, the company is effectively betting on itself. Action to take: buy NVIDIA, NASDAQ, NVDA, up to $419.17 per share. Alphabet dominates AI, leading to solid growth in 2026 over Q4 25. Our investment thesis in Alphabet, NASDAQ, Google, was verified. Its search remains strong, its cloud business is growing, and its AI platform Gemini is gaining market share. As Q4 revenue exceeded $400 billion for the first time, Google's search saw revenue grow 17%, YouTube annual revenue surpassed $60 billion, and Google Cloud emerged as the primary growth engine, with revenue surging 48% year-over-year with a backlog that more than doubled to $240 billion. Alphabet's Gemini 3 AI model has seen rapid adoption, with the Gemini app reaching 750 million monthly active users and over 8 million paid seats in just 4 months. Additionally, driverless taxi business Waymo surpassed 400,000 weekly rides and secured a new $16 billion investment round to fund global expansion. We continue to believe that Alphabet and Nvidia is the best way for investors to capture the largest gains from AI. Action to take: buy Alphabet, Google, up to $345.90 per share insider buying at Omrise. Even though most investors have never heard of Omrise, NYSE, AMRZ, the building materials giant stands at number one in cement, with 46 years of future supply and more than 1,000 distribution sites in every U.S. state. CEO Jan Jenisch purchased $3.5 million in shares on March 6, adding to the $99 million in direct purchases he's already made. In the last earnings call, Jenisch confirmed that Omrise is directly benefiting from the AI capex boom, noting that the company supported and supplied more than 30 data center projects in 2025. Action to take: buy Omrise, NYSE, AMRZ, up to $82.51 per share. International General Insurance leverages capital return strategy. In late February 2026, International General Insurance, NASDAQ, IGIC, reported a stellar 85.9% combined ratio for the full year 2025, turning 14 cents of every dollar into underwriting profit. While net income dipped slightly to $127.2 million, the company achieved an elite 18.6% ROE, far exceeding its 10-year average. Most impressively, IGI grew its book value per share 14% to $16.91 while maintaining zero financial debt, a rare fortress balance sheet in today's high-interest rate environment. The real catalyst for the future of IGIC shares, which we recommended in October 2024, is the company's aggressive capital return strategy. On February 25, the board declared a massive $1.15 per share special dividend, 4.5% yield, on top of its regular quarterly payout. This marks the third straight year of special dividends, totaling over $108 million returned to shareholders in 2025 alone. With the stock still trading at a modest PE of 8.3x and a tangible book value that continues to compound, shares of IGIC are trading at a discount. Action to take: buy International General Insurance, NASDAQ, IGIC, up to $45.21 per share. Salesforce IS, an AI rebound software giants, are navigating a turbulent transition as generative AI threatens to disrupt traditional seats for software as a service, SaaS, businesses. Concerns over AI exhaustion sent shares of customer relationship management platform Salesforce, NYSE, CRM, tumbling nearly 20% between January and mid-February. However, things began to change following the company's February 25 earnings call, when Salesforce reported Q4 2026 revenue of $11.2 billion, a 12% year-over-year increase, and a massive EPS beat of $3.81 against the $3.05 projected. While the stock initially dipped on conservative 2027 guidance, the underlying fundamentals suggest the market is underestimating the agentic enterprise transition that will greatly benefit companies like Salesforce. The bull case centers on the explosive adoption of Agentforce, which has become the fastest-growing organic product in the company's history. Combined with Data 360, the platform's AI and data annual recurring revenue, ARR, surged to $1.8 billion in Q4, with Agentforce-specific ARR growing 169% YI. On March 16, Salesforce doubled down on its valuation by launching a strategic bond offering to fund a $25 billion accelerated share repurchase, the largest in corporate history. This is part of a broader $50 billion buyback program that signals management's conviction that the current stock price, trading near 15x normalized PE, is fundamentally disconnected from its cash flow trajectory. The boring customer relationship management business is successfully reinventing itself as a high-margin AI powerhouse. Action to take: buy Salesforce, NYSE, CRM, up to $251 per share. Struggles for coal and core natural resources. The coal sector has faced a turbulent few months. While the International Energy Agency reported record global coal demand in late 2024, the real challenge has been operational bottlenecks and fluctuating prices. We recommended Core Natural Resources, NYSE, Corner, in July 2024, expecting it to enjoy a boom resulting from the parallel processing revolution, while bolstering its long-term future as an exporter of high-quality coal into a growing international market. While those macro elements held up, the Appalachian coal producer has had to navigate significant volatility at its Leer South and West Elk mines, where production pauses throughout 2025 created a drag on output and ultimately the bottom line. Although management has signaled stability for these mines entering 2026, the company's inability to turn consistent profits over the trailing 12 months highlights the narrow margin for error in the current high-cost environment. On February 12, Core Natural Resources reported Q4 2025 EPS of -$1.54 against a projected loss of only 78 cents. Despite the earnings miss, revenue grew to $1.04 billion, beating estimates and reflecting the increased scale of the company following its 2025 merger with Consol Energy. Management is banking on merger synergies, now projected to exceed the original $140 million annual target, to stabilize the capital structure. However, with a net loss of $153.2 million for the full year 2025, the narrative of synergy-driven growth remains a future-dated promise rather than a present reality. Still, with the major disruptions to the supply of natural gas in the Middle East, we can see a small surge in demand for coal. With shares currently around $100 and above our $92.82 buy-up to price, we have moved Core Natural Resources to a hold. Action to take: hold shares of Core Natural Resources, NYSE. Corner: Hovnanian posts strong quarter as affordability strains. The housing market, with high mortgage rates and home prices, home sales have dropped to their lowest levels since 2009, down 35% from the pandemic peak. Despite these macro-level challenges, leading home builder Hovnanian Enterprises, NYSE, HOV, posted a surprise EPS beat of $2.62 against a projected loss. Since adopting competitor NVR's asset-light business model nearly a decade ago, Hovnanian has gone from tempting bankruptcy to having $340 million of cash on its balance sheet and an investment-grade credit rating. The most interesting part of the story is the company's overseas expansion. On January 1, Hovnanian took a controlling interest in National Housing, NHC, a Saudi joint venture, with the enterprise now becoming consolidated into Hovnanian's financials. While NHC is smaller in volume than the U.S. business, its ROE is significantly higher because it requires less capital from Hovnanian. Despite the success of the Saudi venture, we don't expect HOV shares to perform well until the U.S. housing market recovers. Action to take: hold shares of Hovnanian Enterprises, NYSE, HOV. Wingstop growth hits a speed bump. Chicken wing enthusiasts and investors alike are feeling the burn of a cooling consumer market. Wingstop, NASDAQ, Wing, has historically been a growth story, but recent trends suggest the fast-casual restaurant chain has begun to stagnate. While the company still boasts a massive digital presence, price-sensitive consumers have sent domestic same-store sales falling 5.8% in Q4 2025, the brand's first annual decline in 22 years. Wingstop posted a surprise earnings beat on February 18, $1 EPS against the 84 cent projected. The company's asset-light model remains a cash flow fortress, allowing it to open a record 493 net new restaurants in 2025 even as individual store performance softened. On March 11, the board authorized an additional $300 million share repurchase program, signaling management's belief that the stock is undervalued after dropping nearly 48% to $200 from its 52-week high of $388. While the upcoming national launch of the Club Wingstop loyalty program at the end of Q2 2026 offers hope for a frequency rebound, we are cautious about the near-term recovery. Management's 2026 guidance projects domestic same-store sales to be flat, suggesting that growth will rely almost entirely on new store openings rather than organic demand. Action to take: hold shares of Wingstop, NASDAQ, Wing, BWXT. Feeling share price growth pains as tech giants look to diversify, hunting for carbon-free, 24/7 power, BWX Technologies, NYSE, BWXT, has positioned itself as the arms dealer for this energy renaissance. However, after shares surged over 100% in a year, BWX Technologies is now grappling with high expectations. The market has effectively baked in the company's competitive advantages and commercial wins, leaving little room for further upside in the immediate future. In late February, BWX Technologies posted a Q4 earnings beat, reporting EPS of $1.08, significantly higher than the projected 88 cents. The headline grabber was the total backlog of business, which skyrocketed 50% YoY to a record $7.3 billion, driven by massive awards in naval propulsion and a surge in commercial nuclear power contracts. While commercial operations saw revenue jump 95% in Q4, the core government operations segment saw a 1% revenue decline. The company is in a heavy investment phase, with capital expenditures rising 34% to support the expansion of its Cambridge facility in Canada, a major manufacturing site specializing in nuclear power generation equipment, and the launch of its new digital center in Florida. Both growth initiatives are essential for the long term but are currently putting pressure on free cash flow and operating margins. Shares of BWXT are currently trading at a PE multiple of roughly 55x, well above the aerospace and defense peer average of 35x. Management's Q1 2026 outlook projects relatively flat earnings growth due to project mix and the costs of ramping up new programs. With the stock trading near its 52-week high, we believe it needs time to digest its recent gains and prove it can maintain margins while integrating its new acquisitions. Action to take: hold shares of BWX Technologies, NYSE, BWXT, Lowe's looks for stability and growth diversified holding company. Lowe's, NYSE, L continues to operate as a steady-handed defensive play, even as its various segments fight challenging market cycles. Lowe's posted a robust $1.94 EPS for Q4 2025, a significant jump from the 86 cents reported in the same period last year. This growth was largely driven by its core insurance subsidiary, CNA Financial, which contributed $276 million to net income. Throughout 2025, Lowe's remained aggressive in its capital allocation, repurchasing 8.9 million shares for roughly $782 million. By the end of the year, book value per share climbed to $95.89, up from $88.18 a year prior, signaling that the company is effectively growing its underlying value even when the market price remains stagnant. Lowe's non-insurance subsidiary, Boardwalk Pipelines, is currently riding a natural gas renaissance, ending the year with a record contractual revenue backlog of $19.6 billion, a 38% YoY increase. This provides a massive, predictable cash flow cushion. Meanwhile, Lowe's Hotels saw net income dip to just $6 million in Q4, weighed down by a $20 million impairment charge related to the replacement of the Arlington Sheraton and ongoing renovations in Miami Beach. Action to take: hold shares of Lowe's, NYSE, L. China's property slump caps upside potential for Otis. The elevator industry is currently caught between two opposing forces: a booming demand for service and modernization and a stagnant market for new construction. Globally, the high interest rate environment has cooled new building starts. China, once the primary engine for new elevator installations, remains in a deep structural slump. Industry-wide, the new equipment market is estimated to have declined 13% in 2025, and experts anticipate an additional 5% to 8% dip in 2026. Despite these negatives, Otis Worldwide, NYSE, Otis, reported Q4 2025 EPS of $1.03, meeting analyst expectations. While sales only grew 1%, service revenue jumped 8% YoY, and modernization orders, where building owners upgrade aging systems, surged by a staggering 43%. The strategic pivot to an asset-light service model is paying off. Otis now maintains a record 2.5 million units around the world, with 1.1 million of those being connected units that allow for predictive maintenance, the big moneymaker. This high-margin recurring revenue helps insulate the bottom line. In Q4, the service segment accounted for 93% of the company's operating profit. However, this success is being balanced by a 20% decline in new equipment orders in China, where the company is forced to trade volume for price stability. Looking ahead, management has guided for 2026 sales growth in the low to mid-single digits and expects to return $1.6 billion to shareholders through dividends and buybacks. The stock has traded sideways as investors wait for a clearer recovery in the Chinese property market and a broader easing of global construction costs. Until the new equipment segment stabilizes to match the momentum of the service business, the stock's upside remains capped. Action to take: hold shares of Otis Worldwide, NYSE, Otis, AI excitement baked into Texas Pacific Land price. Texas Pacific Land, NYSE, TPL, is riding a wave of transition from a pure-play oil royalty firm to a diversified AI infrastructure powerhouse. While the company's core business remains deeply tethered to the Permian Basin, where it owns over 870,000 surface acres, the narrative has shifted toward its potential as a digital landlord. In February, shares increased over 50%, fueled by soaring global energy prices and management's aggressive push into data centers. This rapid appreciation has pushed TPL's valuation higher, with a forward PE now hovering near 77x, signaling that much of the AI excitement may already be baked into the current price. Despite the momentum, Texas Pacific reported Q4 2025 earnings on February 18, which presented a more nuanced picture. The company posted a slight miss with EPS of $1.79 against a $1.83 forecast, and $212 million in revenue fell short of expectations. The miss was largely driven by a 15% YoY decline in realized oil prices, which partially offset record-breaking royalty production and a 36% surge in water sales volumes. To reward patient shareholders, the board increased the quarterly dividend 12.5% to 60 cents per share, underscoring the resilience of its debt-free, asset-light business model, which maintains a staggering 60% net income margin. Looking ahead to the rest of 2026, Texas Pacific is allocating roughly $20 million of its $70 million CapEx budget toward advancing next-gen technologies. While the long-term roadmap for high-margin data center revenue is compelling, the new projects remain in the early stages. Given the extreme technical volatility and the stock's 75% year-to-date gain, the immediate upside appears capped by valuation discipline. Action to take: hold shares of Texas Pacific Land, NYSE, TPL. Resale resilience amid premium valuations at Winmark. Resale franchisor Winmark, NASDAQ, WENA, continues to demonstrate the strength of its asset-light franchise model, even as the broader retail sector faces mixed signals. Its resale brands Plato's Closet and Playette Against Sports remain natural hedges against inflation, as consumers increasingly seek value-oriented, sustainable shopping options. However, while the business model is highly efficient, the stock currently trades at a premium PE multiple of 40x, suggesting that much of the company's consistent execution is already priced into the shares. In its most recent Q4 2025 earnings reported on February 18, Winmark posted a net income of $9.96 million, or $2.69 per share, a slight miss against analyst estimates of $2.78, but an increase over the $2.60 earned in the same period last year. Annual revenue for 2025 climbed to $86.1 million, up from $81.3 million in 2024, driven largely by higher royalty income. Following a massive $10 per share special dividend in late 2025, the company approved a standard quarterly dividend of 96 cents per share paid in March 2026, marking 16 consecutive years of consistent payouts. On March 16, the company announced two new revenue-generating initiatives: a $295 monthly software fee for all stores and a 2% North American ad fund for Plato's Closet. While these fees are expected to modernize the tech infrastructure and boost brand visibility, they also add costs for franchisees. Given the high valuation and the modest pace of organic growth, the stock is likely to be a steady compounder that lacks a major near-term catalyst for a breakout. Action to take: hold shares of Winmark, NASDAQ, WENA. Credit acceptance finds a squeezed subprime consumer. The subprime auto market is currently navigating a challenging landscape of persistent inflation and fluctuating used vehicle values. Over the last 3 months, leading subprime lender Credit Acceptance, NASDAQ, CAC, has dealt with a cooling dealer network, with active dealer counts dropping 2.8% and loan volume per dealer falling 6%. While the broader economy shows signs of stabilization, the subprime consumer remains weak. Despite these challenges, on January 29, Credit Acceptance posted a notable earnings beat for Q4 2025, delivering EPS of $11.35 against the $10.01 expected. The company continues to maintain a fortress-like liquidity position, ending the year with $1.7 billion in available credit and cash. Furthermore, management remains one of the most aggressive cannibal-style buyers of its own stock, repurchasing approximately 3.8% of outstanding shares in the final quarter of 2025 alone. Going forward, it seems that the company's new CEO, Vinayak Hegde, is repositioning the subprime auto lender as an AI-powered lending platform, leveraging 30 years of data to achieve 2-second loan approvals, 10x faster, 70% faster tech deployment, and flat headcount despite growth. Citroen Research has flipped its short position into a bullish $714 price target, a 54% bump from the current $461 per share. However, with the stock trading near its fair value and the subprime consumer under pressure, we believe the upside is uncertain in the short term. Action to take: hold shares of Credit Acceptance, NASDAQ, CAC. Diageo's premium spirits face, a global cooldown global spirits leader, Diageo, NYSE, DIO, has a strategy of premiumization that seems to be hitting a wall as consumers globally pivot to affordability. In the U.S., high-end labels are losing ground as inflation-strained drinkers trade down to value brands or beer. This shift, combined with inventory gluts in the once-booming tequila category and a weakness in Chinese spirits, led to a 2.8% drop in net sales for the first half of fiscal 2026. While beer brand Guinness remains a bright spot with 10.9% growth, the broader portfolio is grappling with a post-pandemic hangover. New CEO Dave Lewis, who took the helm in January, wasted no time signaling a deep reset. In the February 25th earnings call, the company halved its interim dividend to 20 cents per share and lowered its 26 sales outlook to a decline of 2% to 3%. This aggressive rebasing, aimed at slashing debt and reinvesting in more affordable mass market offerings, initially sent shares down 10%. To further lean out the balance sheet, Diageo is also finalizing a $2.3 billion sale of its East African brewery stake to Asahi. Despite the reforms and a valuation near a decade-low 12x forward earnings, the stock remains in a waiting pattern. While the aggressive cost-cutting and portfolio reshuffling are necessary, the recovery depends on stabilizing North American volumes, a tough task in the current environment. Action to take: hold shares of Diageo, NYSE, DIO. Deer likes that the agricultural cycle nears the trough. Low commodity prices and high interest rates continue to strain farm cash flow, forcing growers to defer large equipment purchases. Despite this, leading tractor maker Deer & Company, NYSE, DA, is navigating the downturn by aggressively managing dealer inventories and leaning into its tech-heavy smart industrial strategy. While large agricultural demand is projected to drop 20% this year, the company is absorbing a $1.2 billion annual tariff hit by shifting focus to higher margin precision tools and internal cost efficiencies. In its February earnings report, Deere posted a significant beat with $2.42 EPS against the $2.02 projected. While net income fell 25% YoY, revenue climbed 13% to $9.61 billion, driven by a massive 34% surge in construction and forestry and 24% growth in small ag. This diversified strength allowed management to raise its full-year 2026 net income guidance to $4.5 billion to $5.0 billion, reinforcing the narrative that 2026 represents the bottom of the current cycle. Despite the earnings beat and raised guidance, the stock has recently rallied to the top of its 52-week range, trading at a valuation that already reflects much of this optimism. Until the large ag segment shows a clear reversal, we believe the recovery has been priced in before it has fully arrived. Action to take: hold shares of Deere & Company, NYSE, DAY. Premium growth meets margin compression at Progressive. The auto insurance industry is navigating a soft market where aggressive customer shopping and high policy availability are cooling the record-breaking price hikes of previous years. For property and casualty leader Progressive, NYSE, PGR, this shift is evident in the slowing pace of personal lines growth, which, while still positive at 10% in early 2026, has moderated from the 20% clip seen in mid-2025. While the company achieved a stellar 87.4% combined ratio for the full year 2025, far better than its 96% target, investors are now wary that these peak margins are unsustainable. Rising auto parts costs are beginning to put pressure on underwriting profitability, leading us to believe the era of massive earnings surprises may be leveling off. Nevertheless, Progressive delivered a solid beat in its Q4 2025 report, posting EPS of $4.67 against the $4.44 consensus. This financial strength allowed for a massive $13.50 per share variable dividend paid in January, reflecting the company's ability to generate significant capital even as the cycle turns. However, optimism has shifted toward caution. Recent institutional sell-offs by major players and the announced retirement of longtime CFO John Sauerland have introduced short-term uncertainty. While Progressive remains a best-in-class operator with an 18.5% share of the private passenger auto market, the stock currently trades below its 52-week high as the market waits to see how it handles a more competitive, lower-margin environment in 2026. Action to take: hold shares of Progressive, NYSE, PGR, MSCI. Rocked by volatility, institutional demand for high-quality data remains a pillar for stock market data aggregator MSCI, NYSE, MSCI, but market volatility and a cooling ESG landscape are creating a tug-of-war for the stock. Over the last 3 months, MSCI has navigated a shifting sentiment as investors weigh its dominant market position against a slower environment for new fund launches. While assets under management and exchange-traded funds, ETF, linked to MSCI indexes grew 19% YoY into early 2026, the company is facing a notable slowdown in the sustainability sector. Sustainable fund launches dropped 50%, and net new subscriptions have shown signs of cooling as clients become more selective with their spending. As a result, shares largely traded sideways as the market waits for a clearer catalyst. Despite these environmental pressures, MSCI's Q4 2025 earnings reported on January 28 demonstrated the strength of its asset-light subscription model. The company posted EPS of $4.66, beating the consensus estimate of $4.60, on revenue of $822.5 million. This marked their 11th consecutive year of double-digit adjusted EPS growth, fueled by a 20.7% surge in asset-based fees and a steady 93.4% retention rate. CEO Henry Fernandez is doubling down on AI-driven solutions and private asset analytics, he says, to offset the softness in the Americas ESG market. However, with the stock trading at a premium valuation, roughly 34x to 36x PE, and the pace of growth in new subscriptions showing some friction, the immediate upside appears priced in. Action to take: hold shares of MSCI NYSE. MSCI distribution shifts create volatility for Celsius energy drink maker Celsius. NASDAQ CEL is navigating a transitional period as it integrates major acquisitions and optimizes its massive distribution partnership with PepsiCo PEP. Despite maintaining a 20% share of the U.S. energy drink market, Celsius saw growth cool to roughly 7.5% as the company faced challenges within the Pepsi system. While the brand remains a leader in the better-for-you energy drink category, the transition has introduced short-term uncertainty in sales patterns, with gross margins dipping to 47.4% in the final quarter of 2025 due to integration costs and the inclusion of lower-margin brands like Rockstar. The most recent earnings report on February 26 provided positive news, with $722 million in revenue and EPS of 26 cents, both significantly beating estimates. This performance was largely driven by the explosive growth of Alani Nu, which contributed $1 billion in sales since its acquisition and is expected to finish its full integration into Pepsi's network by the end of Q1. Management remains optimistic, targeting a return to low minus 50% gross margins by late 2026 and securing a 17% increase in North American shelf space. However, until the volatility from these massive portfolio shifts subsides and the international expansion, currently only 5% of total sales, gains more meaningful traction, we view the stock's current valuation as balanced against its execution risks. Action to take: hold shares of Celsius, NASDAQ, CEL. Hershey works its way out of high-cost environment. The Hershey Company, NYSE, HSY, is successfully transitioning from a defense posture to earnings restoration as the extreme cocoa spikes of 2025 begin to moderate. In its Q4 2025 report on February 5, Hershey delivered a robust EPS beat of $1.71 versus $1.40 expected, driven by 9% price increases and the growth of its Lesser Evil Snacks acquisition. However, high costs remain a problem. Adjusted gross margin still sat at 38.3%, a 650 basis point drop from previous levels, as the company continues to work through expensive inventory hedged during last year's cocoa price peak. Management's aggressive 2026 guidance, projecting 30% to 35% EPS growth, hinges on a gross margin inflection expected in the second half of the year. Despite this operational recovery, the stock remains a hold. The market has already priced in much of the recovery, sending shares up over 20% year-to-date to trade at roughly 29x forward earnings. While falling cocoa prices may boost margins in 2027, organic confectionery volumes declined 3% in the latest quarter, suggesting consumers are finally pushing back against double-digit price hikes. Action to take: hold shares of the Hershey Company, NYSE, HSY.